VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm not. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us on this lovely Thursday. In the studio with us, I am excited because it's a rare treat to get him twice in one week.
Double dose.
That's right. It's The Times Chief Stats Officer, Bill David Edgar, the man with three first names. David is your middle name, right?
That's correct. Yeah. How do you know that? That's very
stalkish.
Spooky.
Good morning. There's this thing called the internet where you can find out. Use the Tor browser, move into the dark web. And down the line, the man on the Manchester beat for The Times. I'm wondering if I should out his middle name too, or if I should just leave it at that. I'll keep the suspense for next time.
Yeah.
It's Paul Hurst.
It's Michael. Michael's my middle name, after my dad.
You have to ruin it for everybody. I knew that.
Yeah, I was going to say something outlandish, like, I don't know.
I thought it was Paul Rees-Mogg Hurst, but guess not.
Yeah, we're from the same bloodline, definitely.
Later on, we'll be looking ahead to the clash of the last two Premier League champions, and we'll be rating and reviewing the Premier League's newest manager, and I'll be revealing, Natalie, what his name sort of means in German.
Ooh. Okay, look forward to that. But we start with a high-scoring draw at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Arsenal. The Gunners twice took the lead, with United twice responding as the spoils were shared. Now, Paul, you were there. Was this a game that highlighted the flaws, perhaps, in both sides?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, if you look at the all four goals, really, they're all results of pretty shocking defending or goalkeeping. In the case of the first one, and you know, Arsenal and United have both had very poor defensive records this season. Both have only kept two clean sheets, and that's the joint worst in the league with West Ham and Cardiff. So it's not great company to be in. And I just thought, you know, that the second equaliser for United, it came, you know, so quickly after the restart, just showed how little focus and how poor both teams, both teams were defensively, how brittle they were. And, you know, it won't go down as one of the classics of the United-Arsenal era. You know, it was pretty, I know it was entertaining, there were four goals, but in terms of quality, it was very, very poor. And by the end, you know, United couldn't pass it out from the back, and it was all just a bit, I just sat there thinking, come on, let's finish this, let's leave it as it is, because it's not going to get any better.
Yeah, it's weird. It was a kind of game where if you were watching at home on television, as I was, you were kind of like, ooh, what's going to happen next? Like, it was exciting, right?
Yeah.
But there was such a lack of quality. And look, if you're Jose Mourinho and you leave out your more technical players, I mean, maybe, you know, had he started with, and I'm sure we'll get into why not, but if he started with people like Pogba and Mata, whatever, on the pitch, maybe we would have seen a different type of football. Part of it maybe was also the weather conditions. Part of it maybe Arsenal were a little spent. Part of it was that Arsenal lost two starters, and so it was game plan out the window by halftime. Is this their dimension, or are they just different when they miss key pieces?
I did think they looked tired, particularly in the second half. I was very impressed by Guendouzi and Torreira in midfield. I thought they were the most energetic players on the pitch. You know, they were very, very good on the ball, particularly Guendouzi, such a young player. He's so good on the ball, always demanding it, always driving forward. They showed United's midfield up a bit, really. I mean, Herrera was just going around kind of, you know, snapping at ankles as he does, but there was very kind of little creativity, you know, in comparison when you compare, you know, United's midfield to Arsenal. And like you say, you know, Pogba would have brought that. I just think United went, it was so kind of predictable, so such a lack of creativity in that United midfield that they just almost ended up bypassing them. I mean, there's so many times when Rojo had the ball at the back and he just like lumped it into one of the channels and hoped that Martial had run onto it. That seemed to be the plan for United, which is quite worrying moving forward.
United basically gave up midfield, I thought. They had Matic and Herrera in there, but it was more or less 5-2-3. They had the three kind of speedy, youngish kind of chasers up front who, it's very exciting when it comes off, but basically they're just knocking long balls up to them, Lingard, Rashford and Martial, are just vacating centre midfield. So Guendouzi and Torreira pretty much had it to themselves over and over again. They got the ball in the centre circle and just nobody there. So
you
United
do that
kind of
because if you
it.
Play Pogba, he just gives the ball away all the time.
Well, yeah,
right?
They were at the moment exactly. I mean, that was their tactics, but the back three were very poor in possession, so there wasn't much chance of them finding a teammate nearby. So it was best just to knock it long anyway. So I mean, it was quite unedifying, really. I mean, Arsenal produced what entertaining football there was, and they probably had the edge, I think.
What about the value of Manchester United's bench? Almost £250 million. And bear in mind, of course, the £47 million Fred wasn't even a substitute either. Is that a message, Paul, from Mourinho to his board, do you think?
I think defensively, certainly, he had very kind of few options for the bench. Mourinho said he had no one, basically. I mean, McTominay. So that's why he chose McTominay on the bench. I think he was the backup centre-half. And he had Fellaini on the bench as well. And, no one moves Marouane Fellaini from that squad. He's right up there with Mourinho's most important players. Then you've got Mata, you can't really drop him. Pogba, obviously, he's got to be in the squad. And Lukaku as well. So Fellaini's so important. Pogba's got to be included. McTominay was the backup centre-half. Then there was no room for Fred, really, on the bench. Which is, it's remarkable when you consider that he's the fourth most expensive signing in the club's history and he's barely kicked a ball this season. I thought he looked very good at the start of the season. He was very energetic, very dynamic. And this was a guy that Man City were after as well. They thought that he could be the long-term replacement for Fernandinho. Mourinho's just not using him at all. I don't know whether it's a criticism of the scouting department. We know that Mourinho's had... he's had doubts about the whole scouting system, about how it works, about how they identify players. Is he saying, for example, you've bought me a dud here. I mean, I'm not going to include him just because he cost that much money.
Paul, like, we can't use the you bought me a so-and-so. Like, this is not one of those situations where you've got some, control freak director of football and a poor manager under his thumb. This is Jose Mourinho you're talking about. Yeah. These are Manchester United type players. I mean, he had no trouble signing Diogo Dalot, right? Who presumably, I wonder who represents him. But there's no scouting issue there with him. I mean, Fred was a guy who was in the Champions League and stuff. He would have seen him. He should know who he is. It's not like he shows up and all of a sudden there's this like little Brazilian guy there and he's like, who are you, right?
He does what he wants, doesn't he, Mourinho?
Yeah, Pogba, Lukaku. It's not like they sign obscure players. It's not like there's a scouting department that scouts these obscure no-names and spends hundreds of millions on them, right?
No, but this is the problem. There is a massive gap between Mourinho and, the board, really, or certainly Ed Woodward in terms of, transfer targets, etc. I mean, I read the other week that he was interested in Axel Witsel. Forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but I think he's 29. So, I mean, he's clearly not a long-term option that Woodward would be interested in.
More to the point, if you wanted Axel Witsel, Axel Witsel moved in the summer to Borussia Dortmund, right?
Yes.
I think he's a very good player. I would have him over Matic and many United midfielders. But if you wanted him, the time to buy him was in the summer, right? The guy's been to St. Petersburg and he's been to China. He wants to come back. It would have been open and shut on that one. Did you have any insight into, I mean, we talked about it, but the whole virus thing come together with his match day program notes, together with the fact that the virus story was broken. We talked about it again a little bit on Monday, but you've got the local insight, was broken by Duncan Castles, which rather because he's very close to Mourinho's camp, suggests that this was broken with Mourinho's blessing, because I don't think Duncan heard it from Pogba.
We did a story on, I think it was Tuesday morning, saying that that Pogba actually gave him a little bit back, saying, you know, well, that's all very well and good, but I need people in front of me to create movement so I can pass to them. Mourinho was complaining that Pogba was losing the ball, etc. But Pogba was saying, you know, well, who can I pass to? What can I do if everyone's just kind of stood stationary in front of me? I mean, I think that's a little bit kind of weak because, you know, there's so many occasions where Pogba lost the ball under very little pressure and it was quite embarrassing at some stages. In terms of the whole Mourinho-Pogba kind of battle, as it were, that Mourinho was quite diplomatic about it last night after the match. You know, he was invited to say that Pogba's got a fight on his hands to get back into the team, but he actually said, oh, no, I thought he played very well when he came on for 15 minutes.
So what's Mourinho thinking? What's his what is this weird passive-aggressive strategy? Because he had this earlier this year, right? He said Pogba was a monster. Yeah. Was it against Leicester or something? Mm. He gets all the stick, and then I think I'm right in saying Pogba started all but two of United's league games this season. I don't understand what he's doing. Is he trying to get in his head by then the vice captaincy nonsense? What strategy is he employing? Does he think this will motivate Pogba to play better? What is it?
It's Mourinho's go-to kind of tactic, isn't it? When he thinks players aren't pulling their weight, he'll let it be known that he's not happy with them. He will, you know, he will crucify them. He will hammer them into thinking that, you know, I'm actually, you know, I'm not good enough for this team. I need to up my game. I need to improve. And I need to perform better. But it can work one of two ways, can't it? You can either be really sort of dejected by it, which, you know, I'd understand if that was the case. You look at Mkhitaryan, you know, he was really kind of crushed confidence-wise by the time that he left United. And then you go the other way and you look at Shaw, who, you know, it's taken 2 years of quite a brutal hammering, but he's actually playing quite well at the moment. And he does the little things that Mourinho likes. He makes the little cynical fouls to break up play. It just seems that Mourinho wants to criticise and, you know, let it be known that he's not happy with Pogba just to kind of jolt him into reaction, which is, you know, a really kind of risky game to play.
Let's talk about Arsenal. 20 games unbeaten now in all competitions. That's an unbeaten run that started since they lost their opening two fixtures of the season. Bill, it's been some response, hasn't it?
Yeah, certainly. Game after game, initially, say the first five or six games, you thought, oh, maybe a bit lucky. I think home to Watford and home to Everton, they won 2-0 both times, were a bit shaky, but it's just gone on and on and on, and they were really good at home to Liverpool, really good at home to Tottenham, decent enough last night, and certainly at least deserved a draw. So they've you know, played some big teams, and they're looking very solid. I mean, you couldn't have hoped for more, really, from Emery from his first 3 or 4 months. After the departure of Wenger, after all that time, given what happened to Manchester United, how they've collapsed, in the subsequent 5 years, the fact that Arsenal have, shrugged off the departure of the legend. Obviously, he wasn't doing as well in the final stages as Ferguson was, but Emery's done brilliantly.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Now, every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you. And here is one for you on this very podcast. Burnley remain in the bottom three, so remain on course for the rare double of having played in European competition and being relegated within the same season. However, there is a player in the Burnley squad who's done that before. Question is, who is he? I'm just blank. No idea.
I would guess, didn't Hull City play in Europe a few years ago? Or was it so long ago that... Or somebody who maybe played for Wigan?
Well, that's yes, but I can't think who that would be.
Although they were relegated the season they qualified for Europe. Unless it's a foreign player. And
there's not that many of them at Burnley.
No, there aren't.
Let's just remind everyone, the question that we're asking then is, which Burnley player has played in a European competition and then been relegated within the same season? Bill, that's a good one. Stick around to the end of the podcast to find out the answer. The last two champions of England meet at Stamford Bridge on Saturday evening, and they arrive in very different form. The league leaders, Manchester City, have taken 34 points from the last 36 available in the Premier League, while Chelsea, unbeaten for so long under Maurizio Sarri, have now lost two of their last three domestically after defeat at Wolves on Wednesday. Now, Gab, Sarri criticised his players last night for being too confident. What do you make of that?
I think he was probably happy that he wasn't asked about Conte's position.
No Jorginho and all that.
Wolves have been on a bad run of results. I think maybe even results that were worse than their performances. And I thought Chelsea played really well in the first half, could have scored 2-3 goals. And maybe that's where psychologically they kind of felt, all right, we got this. And Sadie himself, you know, he was asked about some penalty incident, and he's like, I'm going to talk about the penalty incident, but more significant is the fact that, you know, we missed four or five very good chances in the first half. And I think that was a difference. And I think this is something that just drives managers mad. When they're in control, you can think Chelsea could do a good job of keeping the ball, especially with the players that they have, and it falls apart. But what I would say, too, though, is knowing Sadie a little bit, I think he's going to emphasize the positives in preparing for this match against City. He's going to emphasize what they did right in the first 45 minutes. He's not somebody who's going to dwell on the mistakes of the second 45. And I think that's also because, you know, there's no risk of Chelsea perhaps underestimating Manchester City or getting a little too relaxed against
them. That
would
be foolish. Of course, poor Pep Guardiola rotated at Watford in midweek. It was a whole new back four. Do we expect to see him rotate again then?
I think he'll make a few changes, yeah. I don't think we'll see Vincent Kompany, for example, starting on Saturday. He came off with a bit of cramp towards the end. I think we'll see, you know, the tried and tested partnership of Stones and Laporte back in central defence. I think Delph, you know, Delph wasn't so great against Watford. Even I got caught out a couple of times on that left hand side. So if Zinchenko's recovering from his broken nose that he got the other night, he might play at left back instead. I think he'll keep the same midfield. I think it'll be Bernardo, David Silva and Fernandinho. And up front is the big question, really. I'm not really sure whether Aguero will be fit to play. There's some suggestions that he'd suffered a thigh injury in training on Monday, so he might miss out. And Gabriel Jesus has been playing up front for the last couple of games, and he looks a completely different player to the one that started. The when he started at Man City, he looks completely bereft of confidence. Looks really, he desperately needs a goal. But I just wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he dropped Jesus and he played a front three of Mahrez, Sané, and Sterling. If those three have they've scored 22 goals between them this season. Gabriel Jesus only scored one in the league, and he just looks like he can't score at all. He won't score enough.
It's easy to forget Gabriel Jesus is 21 years old, you know, because he started for Brazil in the World Cup and because, you know, he did so well in the second half of the last season. And I think it's normal to have pauses. But as Hirsty said, like, I'm assuming it would be Sterling through the middle maybe, but like, you've got Mahrez on fire. You've got Sané, who I would start in every single game because he's a human mismatch. And you've got Sterling, who's, you know, scoring at a rate that you don't expect from a winger, right?
No, I mean, City don't really need a focal point, a focal as a traditional centre forward. Really, the way they play, so much movement. Anybody can play in the front three and move around. And Jesus has shown he can finish very well in the past, but at the moment he isn't. And pretty much all the other attackers and attacking midfielders at City are finishing better than him at the moment. So there's no worry about if you leave out your centre forward, where are the goals coming from? And certainly Sané, Sterling and Mahrez all on absolutely top form at the moment, so there's no problem about playing all three there, certainly.
Let's focus back onto City's opponents then this weekend, Chelsea. We mentioned about City's players being on form. Eden Hazard had scored 7 goals in his first 7 Premier League games this season. He then suffered an injury. Since coming back, hasn't scored in his last 6 league games. So his last Premier League goal came 2 months ago. He's not dominating the games the way he was, Bill.
I'm not so sure. I think he's still, obviously hasn't been scoring so much, but I think he's still been pretty decent. He was okay last night, certainly in the first half. I'm not sure there's too much wrong with Chelsea, really. They came up against a brilliant Tottenham team at Wembley recently. Last night, they could easily have won. They had plenty of chances. I wouldn't be too concerned yet. And I don't think Sarri is about to rip up the blueprint yet. It's interesting that when he makes his substitutions, they're almost always like for like. Chelsea might be playing badly, but he'll be a central midfielder for a central midfielder, striker for striker. It's interesting. It's quite different from most managers. You'll think, right, let's change things. Let's go three at the back. Let's go two up front. Let's do it. But he just sticks. Absolutely, almost every substitution sticks absolutely to it. This is not saying it's necessarily good or bad, but it's an interesting change to the norm.
I think he's spoken about this because people did pick up on it. The one exception that we haven't seen so much this year, what he's done in the past is also he's gone with a small striker instead of a big striker. Obviously, Chelsea's got two big strikers, but he says when your plan's not working, you can either change the plan or you can think about, can somebody who's fresh, who's maybe more athletic, who interprets the position differently, can they execute the plan better? Most of the time, I think since we spend so much time trying to develop chemistry, it makes sense to figure out if we can execute the plan better, if we believe in the plan.
Well, Chelsea are now 10 points off City. So, Paul, they have to win this one, don't they, to have any chance of winning the title?
Yeah, I think so. City and Liverpool are in danger of pulling away now, aren't they, really? And I think, City are so confident at the moment that I can't see anything else but a City win this week. And they were very kind of disciplined at City at Chelsea last season. It was one of the best performances of the season. From talking to people at City, it was celebrated more than any other victory last year, just because they knew that they thought that was a moment. We've kind of cracked it. If we can win at Chelsea, we can win the league. And, I just think that they've got, just that kind of ruthless streak in them at the moment. I mean, they've not played as well in the last two matches, and then they've won both of them comfortably. So, that's a sign of a champion, isn't it?
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sports ad free. That's Amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Southampton slipped to yet another defeat at Wembley on Wednesday against Spurs, but they now have a new manager at the helm, the Austrian Ralf Hasenhüttl. I like that name.
Yeah, Hasenhüttl. Hase means hair, and Hüttl, I think, means small hut, but I could just be making that up. So make of that what you want.
Okay.
It's funny because he made his name with a small club called Ingolstadt, getting them promoted, and then that got him a move to Leipzig. That comes with a little caveat when it comes to Leipzig. And obviously he got Leipzig promoted, and I think they finished second in their first season and sixth in their second. And that's when he was sacked. So obviously people know that Leipzig have a major sponsorship deal with a fizzy drinks company. And they spent a ton of money to get promoted, and they played really good football, but they have a technical director named Ralf Rangnick, who's actually the manager right now, and who was the manager before, he very much micromanages, right? He's a coach who's now a technical director. They have a very defined way of playing. Basically, it's a pretty narrow system in the sense that the width really just comes from the fullbacks, but it's a very high-energy system. They tend not to press super high. They tend to press more in midfield, but they press really, really intensely, and it's very coordinated, and it can be really pretty to watch sometimes. Hasan Hüttl kind of played with similar concepts before when he was at Ingolstadt. So he seemed like a good fit for Leipzig, and he was for a while. I think in their second season last year, when they were disappointing, and bear in mind it was only their second year in the top flight, and they had the Champions League to deal with, which they didn't have before and whatnot. I think he had some major man management issues. Naby Keita, who was obviously their best player, I think, together with Emil Forsberg. Forsberg got hurt. Keita was their best player by some margin. And, you know, he had the whole issue with the Liverpool move and the contract, which caused a lot of tension with the club. His work ethic, if you speak to Leipzig, would say that, well, you know, it wasn't great. He was disinterested. He had a poor season, basically. And so at the end of the year, Hasan Hüttl got the chop. And now they're going to, I think it's Rangnick for a year, and then they're going to get somebody else in Nagelsmann. But what I find interesting is, you know, he's still young. He had the experience with a big club, or a club that thought like a big club, but with a dominating figure above him. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, not that Les Reed is a big dominating, intimidating figure, but he's gone. So I think it's going to be a really interesting dynamic now with Hasan Hüttl, and how much power he actually has and how much license he has to really, you know, put his own stamp on the team.
He does have some good players to work with at Southampton, doesn't he, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, Gab was saying that if he's focusing on his fullbacks to give him the width, the attacking width, then certainly Cedric and Bertrand are very competent players in that
Target,
regard.
Probably even more, no?
Well, Matt Target, yeah, very, decent left-back, certainly.
I always thought of Bertrand as being a little more defensive, maybe, than
Bertrand can... I think he's, you know, obviously played for England, and it's fine in the attack, I think. And interesting, last night, Southampton, they lost 3-1 away to Tottenham, but they played pretty well. It looked like they perhaps got a bit of the new manager boost, as it were, or getting rid of the old manager boost. They hit the woodwork 3 times. Brought back Stephen Davis, perhaps because the caretaker manager was Kelvin Davis. He wanted a namesake on the pitch. But, I mean, Stephen Davis played brilliantly for Northern Ireland this season, so it was a bit odd that it was only his first league start. He's not been injured. James Ward-Prowse is very good, dead balls. They've got a very solid centre midfield. Nathan Redmond's good in the attack, the trickery there. On paper, they've got good strikers, but obviously they've been struggling to
finish. What about Manolo? He played all right.
But I'm just saying generally the strikers' finishing records have been poor in the last year or so. So he does have the players to work with, yeah, certainly.
13 games without a win, though, for Southampton right now. It's their worst run for 20 years. They travel to Cardiff on Saturday, and it's a Cardiff side, let's not forget, that have won back-to-back home games, Bill.
Yeah, and Cardiff, I never thought they were looked no hopers at all, even in the early weeks of the season when the results weren't going their way. And certainly at home, they've looked much better than away. So, I mean, they're certainly going to give Southampton a big test.
In terms of what Hasan Hüttl was going to bring style-wise, I mean, effectively, he played sort of, I think in Germany they called it a 4-2-2-2 formation, a little bit like what Watford do, but the difference is with just a ton of intensity. And I'm just wondering, I mean, when you think of the players they have, there's quality there, but Charlie Austin, Shane Long, maybe not the most dynamic pressing machines out there. Lemina, I think, does a good job getting around the pitch. I'm trying to imagine what you think. Romeo, maybe a little bit less so if he starts. I'm trying to imagine, I mean, how do you see this? Who would fit?
Yeah, I think Shane Long is getting on a bit, but he is at least does chase around well, I think. Perhaps, as I say, Ward-Prowse is better with it when he's kind of standing next to the ball, ready to take a free kick or a corner, than kind of...
You make it seem all this guy does is hit dead balls.
Well, I mean, I'm saying because he is really brilliant at that. It's kind of unique style. Romeo is certainly not the quickest or most agile. We'll see. Maybe Hasan Hüttl will need to get a couple of centre midfield terriers in to help his style along in January.
Hi there, and welcome to The Sweeper, the Times' fantasy football tips service. My name's Charlie Scott, and I'm joined by Paddy Bombear.
Hello.
And we're here to preview Game Week 16. So we had this midweek round of games, Paddy, where a lot of the big names were rested. You're going to read us a little list, aren't you?
Yeah, Christmas is definitely coming. This is just a selection of players who didn't start in midweek. Aguero, Sterling, Laporte, Salah, Firmino, Mane, Robertson, Alexander-Arnold, Vardy, Walcott, Bernard, Keane, Ali, Davies, Pedro, Lukaku, Pogba, Lacazette. There were even more than that. That's just a taster for you. So if you had a starting 11 in midweek,
congratulations.
Well done. The good news, I think, is that the vast majority of those players probably will start this weekend. As a result, that's how rotation works. So don't panic. There's not necessarily a reason to start shipping them out en masse.
Absolutely. And I think just don't get too downbeat if you had a poor week, because it's just going to happen to everyone. That is the nature of having so many games in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it just reminded us that you need a decent bench at this stage of the season. This is why depth is crucial. You're going to have, you've got guys like, you know, cheap players, Wan-Bissaka, defenders at that sort of price range who start. They're not just players who are going to sit on your bench and take up space. Then they're going to come on and they're going to chip in, and it's going to be massively helpful.
Absolutely. And one team who helped quite a few managers out this week was Wolves, with Raul Jimenez, who's one of those quite attractively priced strikers. He scored against Chelsea, and Doherty, the right back, got another assist. They picked up 8 points and 5 points each. Just looking a bit further ahead, you like West Ham?
Yeah, I've said it the past couple of weeks. Their fixtures are very nice right up until the new year, basically. Arnautovic got injured midweek, which is obviously annoying. They've got Felipe Anderson, who's an obvious one. Robert Snodgrass is starting and picking up points at only 5.3 million. And they don't keep that many clean sheets, but their defence is incredibly cheap. Their centre-backs, Diop and Balbuena, are 4.3 and 4.4 million, respectively. And Fabianski in goal is a points machine. So I reckon if you want to get some cheap players and free up some value, that might be the best way.
This weekend, who are the standout names for you? I like a bit of Harry Kane playing Leicester.
Yeah, I think, well, Kane and Aubameyang were the two who everyone was chasing after in midweek. And it still stands, I think. Aubameyang may get a rest at some point soon, but Arsenal have some very nice games coming up. And Kane, if he hits form at the right time and starts every game in December, he's going to be brilliant.
And just a quick shout out to Kieran Trippier and Vincent Kompany, the only defenders in game week 15 to get clean sheet points.
That's remarkable.
They both got substituted for their teams conceded, so well done, you two. Don't forget, you can sign up to receive our weekly email at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball, or join in the fun on Facebook and chuck us your teams and we'll critique them and give any advice and tips and that kind of thing.
Just search for The Sweeper on Facebook, get involved, and ask us whatever you like.
It's time now for our weekly predictions game, where we pick five matches from the weekend and try and predict the score. Let's just remind everybody, Gav, that I am 8-5 up this season. I see that look.
It's uniquely thanks to Jordan Pickford, by the way.
Seriously. A win is a win, and that's what
happened. I think the jamminess is going to end soon, but let's start with the Cherries. Bournemouth and Liverpool, Saturday lunchtime. Liverpool keep grinding out results more than they grind out performances.
They do. And obviously, it's not easy to go to the Vitality Stadium. Bournemouth playing quite well this season, really. But I can't see anything other than a Liverpool win. So I'm going for a 2-1 win.
I think at some point, performances catch up with you. And I think Liverpool, they've got this huge Champions League game coming up against Napoli at Anfield. So I think this is where they drop points. Ooh. And I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Oh, OK. So that's Saturday lunchtime. What about Saturday evening? The champions, Manchester City, heading to Chelsea.
I would have said Saturday late afternoon.
Would you? I was always told that after 5 o'clock, it's the evening.
Really?
Yeah. Don't know why. But
what time do you eat your dinner?
Oh, well, I mean,
if
that
you're not
varies.
Working, I mean,
oh, six-ish.
Really? The whole match is 5:30 to 7:20, so that goes well into the evening, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't, we're not just talking about the actual kickoff time.
Would you watch the game and then have dinner if you didn't have, if you're working and didn't have plans, or would you?
Well, I could eat my dinner and watch it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could do that.
Well, what would you normally do?
On a Saturday, we'd probably eat and watch at the same time.
Just wondering about that. Sorry for that brief digression. As Bill Edgar told us, Chelsea played really well against Wolves. Mm. I think Manchester City also due perhaps a slowdown at some point, although they certainly don't look like it's coming.
That's a big call, that gap.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
Okay, well, I'm a bit boring, and then I've gone for the same scoreline as I said before, so a 2-1 City win.
And if you're going to go 2-1 when Spurs travel to Leicester as well.
Actually, a bit predictable, my ones, yeah. Do you know what I have? I think Tottenham are going to win 2-1 at Leicester this weekend. I know, it's really boring. I do change as we go along, you should say.
You have 3 away victories. I'm going to walk this. I'm feeling it.
Oh.
No, Leicester against Spurs. Come on, my man Claude Puel jamming them up. Again, Spurs, a big game going to Barcelona. They can say, oh, Barcelona are going to play all the scrubs and they're going to lie down for us. Hey, I'm not so sure. I think Spurs have to put in a performance at the Camp Nou, and they might be looking past that. So I'm going to go for a draw. 0-0.
Oh, okay, 0-0. Right, what about the big game? I say the big game, but it's Sol Campbell's first league game in charge of Macclesfield. He takes his side to Colchester.
Sol Campbell, the former candidate for Mayor of London.
Yes, right, the very same.
So I'm told Macclesfield are really, really bad. And
bottom, yes.
Yeah, they're bottom of League Two. And I have no idea where Colchester are. Were Colchester managed by somebody good? Like, who then went on to do something more important at some point?
Paul Lambert, yes. I can think of.
Paul Lambert, that's right. Okay.
Lambert.
All right. So this is a mystery for me, but just because I want this to be a good story, I'm going to pick Macclesfield to win.
Ooh.
2-0.
Okay, well, Macclesfield have picked up a bit of form recently, actually.
Yes.
Having won their last two and back-to-back clean sheets. First time they've done that.
Sorry. So they won 2 games in a row, and then they sacked the poor schlub who was there.
Oh, no, they sacked him before that. They sacked him before that.
So they were doing better without a manager.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Sadly.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, but they are going to third-placed Colchester.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So I think it's going to get worse. I know. I kept that back. I think it's going
to
get worse.
How was I supposed to know? How could I possibly have known that? It's insider trading.
Hello. You're the one that has hotlines to managers most of the time. But anyway, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. But I'm just going for a slender 1-0 home win for Colchester.
And finally, why don't you step into my wheelhouse?
I know.
Juventus hosting Inter in Serie A, Natalie.
Yes. Well, I know that Juventus is going very well. 8 points clear at the top, I believe.
Many points clear, yeah.
Yeah, many, many points clear. They've won all but one of their games, I believe,
that's
in the league.
Right.
And that one game was a draw. So unbeaten, doing very, very well. Inter third, 11 points off Juve. 2-1 win for Juve.
There's a lot of aggro in this game, especially given what happened when Inter played them last season. Again,
what happened last season?
So what happened last season is Juventus were 1 point clear with 3 games to go, 1 point clear of Napoli. Inter were chasing 4th spot. Incredible game where Inter go a goal down, then they have somebody sent off, Vecino, I think it was. Then Miralem Pjanic of Juventus should have very obviously picked up a second yellow, which would have left Juventus down to 10 men with more than an hour to go. Weirdly, he wasn't sent off, and Juventus continued playing with a man advantage. And because this is Inter, and Inter make no sense at all, they actually managed to take the lead and were 2-1 up with 3 minutes to go. And then Juventus scored twice, and basically that sent them on their way to the title. Inter have been playing better, no question about it. But they've got another crunch Champions League match to look forward to. In fact, they had a big game at the weekend against Roma. I just think it takes a ton out of them. So, yeah, I'm going to go Juventus 1-0.
Just time for us to give you the answer to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We said Burnley remain in the bottom three, so remain on course for the rare double of having played in European competition and being relegated within the same season. However, there is a player in the Burnley squad who's actually done that before. This one really stumped us. We ummed and ahed and we had no idea.
No, am I right? Well, is it Karen Brady's oldest?
Well,
youngest son, Robbie.
You say it stumped you, but I have to give credit to Gab.
Wow.
He stepped in and first he said Hull, and that's absolutely right. They played in Europe in 2014-15 because they were runners-up in the FA Cup the previous year to Arsenal, who'd qualified for the Champions League, and they went down that season. And the player in question is indeed Robbie Brady.
Wow. Yes, I'm good.
And the point,
I should get points in the predictions
No.
And he will be the first, if it happens, he'll be the first player ever to have done it twice. The previous teams to be relegated having played in Europe that season were Ipswich in 2001-02. Then you had Blackburn 3 or 4 years before, and then Newcastle in the late 1970s.
Am I right thinking Robbie Brady played his youth football at Manchester United?
Yeah.
Here's a little hint. Bill is a Manchester United fan. So if you notice, at least three quarters of his trivia teasers, and this is all unconscious, he didn't realize he's doing this, have some sort of Manchester United link.
So like this Robbie Brady one. Mm-hmm. It's just there. Mm-hmm. Back of your head.
Deliberately avoid it in future.
Yeah. That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Bill Edgar and Paul Hurst.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. Just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information.
And Gab, you're away on Monday, aren't you?
That's right. I am away. I'll be over at ESPN in lovely Bristol,
Stateside.
Connecticut. Yes.
Lovely. But I'll be back ahead of the final match day of the Champions League group stage for you on Monday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.